Welcome to Dakota Midday. I am Kara Hetland, and a happy Wednesday to you. And Wednesday is the sure sign that it's time to talk with our Dakota political junkies. And joining us this week are Seth Tupper, the Rapid City Journal Enterprise reporter, and Madison Daily Leader publisher John Hunter. Seth and John, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks, Kara.
Well, let's start with what a lot of people are talking about, and that's the latest unraveling of the events that are happening in Platte right now. Marty Jackley held a press conference just moments ago and said that they brought in a canine unit, and it was a dog that alerted them to some certain things, and there's some evidence of some accelerants, but they're doing some further testing, and they're doing some expanded autopsy testing as well. I should probably have a question, right? Sorry about that. So, Seth, what are some of the things that you're hearing there as well? Marty Jackley did say, though, that there was no criminal investigation involved as of this point.
Well, of course, what we saw on our website this morning, we carried Bob Mercer, the Capitol reporter, who's kind of reporting is kind of driving all of this right now. And on his story, you know, the online comments jumped right away to, you know, comparing this to the Richard Benda and EB5 scandal from 2013 and 14. And of course, it's early to jump to any conclusions about that. But obviously, what people are seeing is, you know, in the Benda instance, it was a suicide in southeastern South Dakota. This is a murder suicide, apparently, is what's being alleged, I guess, and also in southeastern South Dakota. And then, you know, Bob Mercer's reporting has revealed that, you know, just I guess hours before this happened, the place where this Scott Westerheis, if that's how you pronounce his name, worked, Mid-Central Cooperative, an educational group in Platte, had lost a $4.3 million state contract just hours before this apparent murder-suicide went down. And he also had a lot of fairly complicated business enterprises dealing with Native American education. That's what the $4.3 million grant was for, a program to encourage Native American students to go to college. So there's just a lot brewing there, and a lot of people wondering what exactly was happening, what was the motive, did these business dealings, the falling through of this state funding, did that have anything to do with the murder-suicide? And of course, that, you know, makes a lot of people think back to the Richard Benda EB5 scenario when there was misuse of state funds and a man turned up dead, et cetera, and it's one seems to be somewhat reminiscent of the other.
And John, this kind of makes me, you know, how careful do we as members of the media have to be with how soon we report information to make sure we have all of our facts correct?
Well, I'm glad you asked it, Kara. There are all sorts of responsibilities with go with that, and I'm proud of my fellow journalists who are digging into this at the appropriate pace. You know, when Bob Mercer was researching that, he gets his facts right. He's not relying on rumors or Facebook or whatever. He might start with a rumor, but then you do fact checking and you make sure it's all correct. So there's a bunch of journalistic standards that I think is really going to has helped certainly in the Benda situation, and it's going to help in this situation if there's any story to be told there. But getting the facts right before publishing, whether it's publishing in paper or online or any other form, is critically important. To talk about things that are rumor, speculation, those kind of things are largely off limits unless they're described as such. So I'm glad so far, at least, that the journalism is doing its job correctly.
Well, and what's the appropriate length of time? I mean, the town of Platte is still very much grieving the loss of this family. And at what point then do you need to separate yourself from the grieving, give them time to grieve before you dive in? Is a week enough time? I mean, these are some of the debates that we've been having around here as well.
Well, go ahead, Seth.
Oh, well, you know, when the allegations arise and the investigators give you an indication that this may have been a murder slash suicide, I don't think you wait at all.
Right.
I mean, you know, sadly, there's just when those kind of details are emerging, there's just no holding back. I mean, I think you try to cover. Of course, we're, you know, long ways removed from Platt out here, so we're not doing much original reporting on it ourselves. But I think you just try to cover both stories. Obviously, there's a community that's rocked by grief here, and probably some innocent victims of a terrible tragedy. So you cover that angle and the way the community is looking into it. But then you also have to cover on the other track, you know, the investigation and what the motive may have been. And I think, you know, your readers want to see both, and I think they deserve to see both.
Let's talk a little bit about the ballot measure that's being proposed by Rick Weiland and Don Frankenfeld. It is called the South Dakota Government Accountability and Anti-Corruption Act. Seth, this is in your neck of the woods a little bit.
Well, yeah, and we'll see if it gets. I guess there, we'll see if it gets on the ballot ultimately, but. It would be a real sea change, apparently, in the way that government or political campaigns are financed. They seek to create public financing and give voters a certain amount of money that they would be able to direct to a candidate of their choosing. And there's a lot of different aspects to it as well. But I was looking at this morning the Secretary of State's website, knowing we were going to discuss this issue. And according to their information on their website, this is one of 16 ballot issues that are either on the ballot, circulating, or are out there and not yet circulating, you know, for 2016. And it's going to be a tough road, you know, to propose something that would be such an enormous shift in the way, in such a fundamental thing as political financing, campaign financing. To swim upstream against potentially 15 other ballot issues and educate people on this and get this through in such a crowded year of ballot issues, I think it's going to be awfully tough. But, of course, we'll have to see as time goes on if they can get their message out.
Well, and how successful, John Hunter, are ballot initiatives if people may not perceive that there's a need?
Well, they do swim upstream in that case. And in for this Act that's being proposed by Weiland and Frankenfeld, there's going to be money associated with it. So remember, they're taking state tax dollars and then giving citizens the ability to give that to candidates. And so it's, you know, I don't know if that's everyone who asks for it or if it's there's a default that it gets split or how that. I mean, I just don't know, and I'm not even sure anyone has calculated exactly what that would be, but. You know, could be millions of dollars. And is that something that South Dakota legislature wants to appropriate for that, or that the voters put on legislatures requiring them to do that when it appears as though, at least through most campaigns, that there are other needs for funds, whether it's education or transportation or Medicare or any of those kinds of things. So I would guess just from the money standpoint, it would swim upstream, and then to be, as Seth described it, a huge sea change of the way. Mm-hmm. And this would be the first state that would do anything like this. And I think that's part of the idea of Rick and Don, is just do this in a small state and see if it spreads to other places.
You said state tax dollars, right? Do we have any of that?
Well, yeah, I don't know exactly how that, again, if you have a ballot issue that requires the state to spend money on something, I guess that comes at the front of the line, and then you mm-hmm. either have to raise taxes or cut other things to make that happen. So it is, and that's another great issue, I think, of 2015, is that we're skipping legislatures and Congress and doing things kind of separately, whether you go through the courts or you go through ballot initiatives or executive orders. Maybe the dysfunction of Congress is causing people to say, let's not go that direction, let's just go straight to the ballot or whatever other form you want to take.
Do you think the dysfunction in Congress is bleeding through to how people perceive their own legislature from operating?
I do. And maybe not in South Dakota as much. Certainly other legislatures are feeling that. The bipartisan nature of that and, you know, kind of the gridlock of that. I mean, a lot of the issues nationally, you know, that activists are trying to take to courts rather than to Congress, and then also to having President Obama issue executive orders, kind of skipping Congress in that case. And yes, I definitely think that's going to legislatures. And in South Dakota, where Democrats are not well represented in the legislature, then yes, the ballot issue, I mean, that's how the minimum wage got going and all these other things. So I do think that dysfunction is causing alternate paths.
Okay. Well, let's stay on the topic of our congressional delegation, and we're seeing some appropriation bills and filibusters and Planned Parenthood funding. Are Republican representatives fighting an uphill battle here?
Well, I can jump in on that one.
Yep.
You know, just my interest in this primarily is, you know, what's really interesting about this issue is we kind of barrel toward potentially another government shutdown over this single issue of Planned Parenthood. Is, you know, Senator Rounds, when he ran for the Senate and when he got into the Senate, and he continues this day to talk about restoring order to Congress, and one of the big issues that he ran on was that Democrats had ground government to a halt and made things too political and had been too caught up in filibusters and things like that and maneuvers. And so, you know, I mean, here's a really interesting predicament then for Republicans who, you know, Senator Thune talked a lot about that as well. And so here they are, potentially, do they support an effort to shut down the government over one issue, important as that issue may be to them and a lot of other people? Or do they not? And do they say, kind of live up to what they talked about with restoring order to government? You know, it's going to be a pretty hard argument to make that you're restoring order to a dysfunctional government if you're supporting yet another shutdown. So I think that'll be the really interesting thing to watch play out there.
Will it backfire?
Well, you know, that's the thing is, you know, the previous shutdown didn't really backfire as far as our congressional delegation is concerned. I mean, it didn't seem to hurt, you know, Congresswoman Noem or Senator Thune politically, who were in office at the time. Democrats haven't been able to really make their participation in any previous situation that led to a shutdown to make that into any kind of an issue that has hurt them. So, you know, they're probably thinking that it won't backfire, and you know, the way things go in South Dakota, it probably won't. But you know, you got to think there's a tipping point somewhere. How many times the government can be shut down or threatened to be shut down before there's political consequences to that?
John Hunter, the Pope is in the United States speaking to Congress tomorrow morning. Anything that we're going to hear from our delegation from that, do you anticipate?
Yes, I think we'll hear something from that. Of course, there's so many issues that, and I'm not privy to what the Pope is going to talk about, but certainly there are humanitarian issues in Europe and the Middle East that are probably at the forefront, and it's becoming at the forefront of the U.S. Congress as well, and immigration, taking on refugees and so forth. So, I think there'll be a big response from all over talking about this. Whether they will have action, we don't know. You know, they've already kind of boosted the number of immigrants or refugees that the United States would take in this crisis. So, yes, I think there'll be, and they could be very well be other issues too that could elicit a response.
What about climate change and the Pope? Do you think Congress will listen?
Oh, I don't. you know, there's Congress. I mean, the idea that Congress really has just two voices, either Republican or Democrat, is pretty true. But there are also people who, I think, on any particular issue, you know, go different than what the party platform is. So I think that's a groundswell. This the whole climate changes, and I would guess that the parties over time are going to be changing this. And I don't know exactly how the Pope will face this, but I would guess that there will be ongoing change in that debate.
And Seth, I'm going to change the topic just a little bit. We're seeing news out of the Mitchell paper that the former director of the Corn Palace is looking to get his job back.
I saw that. I actually talked to the editor there at the Mitchell paper where I used to work. I'm still friends with him. But, yeah, interesting times there. Of course, they elected a new mayor this summer. And, they've had some strife there with the previous Corn Palace director was ousted when questions arose about his handling of finances, and the new guy comes on, and I don't remember how long that he stayed in, a couple of months apparently in the job, and resigned, and now it's for his job back. And I see the Daily Republic there is embroiled in a dispute about a closed-door executive session meeting that was held to discuss some of the complaints and support for the Corn Palace director, Dan Sabers, who resigned. And oddly, apparently, they went into executive session to take comments from the public one by one on this Corn Palace director. So it's all kinds of news happening there on that front. And boy, they sure it looks like they need somebody to come in and stabilize that position of the Corn Palace director.
I'm suggesting a reality show that would really fix all this.
Yeah, as
the Corn Palace. Have the name turned. Kardashian in there somewhere.
Well, we are out of time for this. Political Junkies, lots to talk about, and we'll stay on top of it all next Wednesday as well. So I want to thank you both for taking time and coming on the program today. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Kara.
Seth Tupper, Rapid City Journal Enterprise reporter, and Madison Daily Leader publisher John Hunter joining us on our Dakota Political Junkies. And when we come back, we're going to learn about the Arctic Ghost Ship. You're listening to Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting.